Hi, and welcome to Work Life Cafe podcast. My name is Kashif, and together with Sam, we want to have a dialogue with you about life, work, and how to thrive in our always connected world. Work Life Cafe podcast is brought to you by Manpower Group Malaysia. If you want to talk to us about a specific topic or would like to ask some questions, go to manpower.com.my/worklifecafe. Submit your suggestions or questions there and we will gladly address them. That's manpower.com.my/worklifecafe. So we're asking today a question, how to transform learning? And we have a wonderful guest speaker to address this topic. He's the founder and CEO of Forward School, a revolutionary technology and future skills school in Malaysia. He leads the growth and development of the company with the goal of building sustainable talent pipelines for businesses. Having spent the formative years of his career in Singapore, he has a long experience of product management, user experience, digital business transformation in various industries. Howie Chang, welcome to our podcast. Thank you, Howie, for joining.
No problem. Glad to be here, Kashif and Sam.
Yes, looking forward to a good discussion, Howie.
Howie, could you please perhaps start with a little bit about your journey? You worked in design, user experience, digital business transformation. That was all in Singapore, and you decided eventually to come to Malaysia and set up your school in Penang. And it would be very interesting for me, and I'm sure to our audience, to hear about the school. And by the way, I read about the school in the Edge newspaper, which was kind of intriguing for me to hear how a person who has the experience, industry experience, set up a school which focuses on technology, which focuses on upskilling, reskilling talent in Malaysia.
So basically, Kashif is right to say that I'm born and bred actually in Malaysia, in Penang specifically. I had my education until high school here before I left Malaysia for Singapore. And by and large, my experience in terms of career and work is in Singapore. And I had the privilege to be part of the successful startups in Singapore itself. With two ended up being acquired. One is RedMart.com and the other is Viki.com. So that gives me some level of experience pretty much from end to end, right? From a startup all the way towards acquisition. And I work very closely with the CEOs, and that has been a tremendous experience in itself. As well. And obviously, working with these founders, I myself caught the entrepreneurship bug. Therefore, I went on to found a few startups, in fact. Some were pretty well, some not so well, like in all things in life. But I think all in all, the experience from all of these ventures has been invaluable today as I build Forward School. So long story short, I had the opportunity to come back to Malaysia. My first few projects that I was working on is basically a consulting gig with the Penang state government to help them grow the startup ecosystem here in Penang. The startup ecosystem here in Penang is still fairly new. Though it is growing rapidly. As you know, Penang is very much also known as the Silicon Valley of the East, simply because we have all of the big semiconductors as well as manufacturing and the E&E sectors here. We have the likes of Bosch, of Intel, of Motorola. I mean, all of their factories are here in Penang. That gives us a tremendous opportunity to tap into the ecosystem, the high-tech ecosystem that's here. And the good news is that a lot of the employees of these corporations are actually coming out and being entrepreneurs themselves. So they come out and then they build companies, they build startups, and that's been very encouraging. And one of the reasons why, you know, I come back to Penang, it's really because I see that there are ample opportunities, opportunities to solve problems on the ground, and opportunities to be part of a growing digital ecosystem here in Malaysia. I mean, in Penang specifically, yes, traditionally, it is very much semiconductor, very much factory-based, though high-tech, but still largely there's lots of area of growth when it comes to digital. As more and more of these companies moving towards Industry Revolution 4.0, as more and more of them are trying to, you know, have their machines on the cloud. So there is a significant need and an area of growth when it comes to cloud computing, as well as, for example, like software engineering or data science. I ended up founding Forward School. It's because after 4 years in Malaysia, I recognize that we are of no lacking of great ideas, but there seems to be, you know, always a lacking of talents, the right talents to execute them. In my 4 years, you know, growing the startup ecosystem, I've always had people coming up to me and ask me for recommendations to CTOs, right? Or software developers. They have a great idea, but, you know, they can't necessarily find the right skill sets, the right kind of people to help them execute it. So that forms the genesis and then the idea of Forward School. We are in a mission to bridge the widening digital skills gap globally by really making quality tech education accessible to all. And of course, to helping companies to enable their workforce to reskill and upskill.
So if I understand correctly, you felt that Penang, given its reputation as being the Silicon Valley of the East and kind of a manufacturing hub in Malaysia, you saw an opportunity to set up Forward School as an entity that would help address some of the skill gaps that these companies are facing in Malaysia.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think there are a tremendous, huge opportunity here.
What type of skill gaps and where exactly do you see that gap between what the industry is looking for versus available talent pool?
I think in today's development teams or, you know, HR generally, they face a tough reality. Tried and true ways of doing things in the past might not necessarily work anymore. Especially so when, you know, it's being disrupted or upended by new technologies, right? New competitors and, of course, sky-high customer expectations. You know, organizations need digitally savvy, future-fluent leaders who are not just, you know, agile, but also strategic and, you know, data-driven. And it's not just for the leaders and employees as well. There's a certain level of expectation that a mindset, a growth mindset is very much needed. And companies need them now. And that basically means that, you know, it's really time for them to seek new ways or new look into talent development, especially. And I must say that a lot of companies are still picking up, are still adjusting. One of the biggest gap is basically looking for this kind of leaders, right? Looking for this kind of employees where, again, like what I said, where they are digitally savvy, they are future fluent leaders, you know, not just having the knowledge, but as well as having the know-how to apply them. That's the gap that we are generally looking at. Of course, it's you know, being accelerated by the pandemic, right, where in the last, you know, 2020 is a wild ride for most of us, and it has definitely, you know, altered the talent and the learning landscape, right? You know, Harvard Business Review, their latest magazine, the main, you know, cover title is The Future of Work from Anywhere, right? It's not just work from home, but the future of work is moving towards working from anywhere. And organizations will have to learn how to transition towards more remote workers, or you know, mobilize others, or in some cases, they will have to completely pivot their business model.
So Howie, I'm particularly interested in a couple of areas that you mentioned. You talked an awful lot about resilience, problem solving, which typically tend to be more characteristics built into the individual versus skill sets. So can you tell us a little bit more in terms of how do you balance that? Because, you know, there are two schools of thought. One is that, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And I think it's based on how a person is hardwired. And there is another thought which says, you know, with some self-awareness, you can mitigate or you could support that. Can you share with us a little bit more on what are your thoughts around that, and what's the approach that that you're taking with Forward with regards to that?
Right. I think for us here at Forward, digital competencies is very important. But, you know, increasingly, we also recognize that digital competency alone is not enough. The human skills aspect is it's important as well. And so in our two-year program here at Forward, we also run some boot camps, which is, you know, shorter programs that is primarily for workforce to upskill themselves. But we have a two-year program where we take someone from high school all the way to employment. And we decided that it needs to be a longer form of course, two-year, because a lot of the modules that we cover has to do with the human skills, has to do with teaching them what it means to have a growth mindset, right? Which a lot of times the traditional education institutions do not really emphasize on. Even if they emphasize on it, a lot of times it's a sideshow, right? It's just a workshop or two. But I think at Forward here, we recognize that as more and more jobs are going to be automated, yes, more and more jobs are going to be run by robots, a lot more things are going to be anchored and empowered and made better by technology. That's when the human skills, the communications becomes extremely important. You know, all of us will need to grow to that level. So here at Forward, how we do it is that we recognize that everyone is different, but the basics of being able to communicate, being able to stand up to your ideas, you know, being able to reason, right, in a clear and structured manner, basics of research, it's equally important. For example, every morning, right, our students have a ritual of stand-up meetings. And it's very much what the industry are doing in Teams, right? They have a morning, we call it morning storms here, whereby every morning they will need to answer three questions. What have I done yesterday? What I plan to do today? And the third question is there anything that is hindering me from accomplishing what I want to do today? And so that conversation alone allows them the opportunity to communicate, which we think is extremely important. So back to Sam's main point, right? The main point is that, yes, I think everyone is wired differently, but I can't think of any other way whereby anyone can choose to ignore the fact that, you know, you don't need these soft skills, or what we call here human skills. You'll need to pick this up in order to remain competitive in the workforce.
It's obviously a constant balance, isn't it, between, you know, the core competences of the individual and also trying to help them adapt to the changes. What have you found as some of the biggest challenges in terms of that transformation journey?
I think the biggest challenges is really not so much about technology itself, or, you know, even having the knowledge in itself. I think the biggest challenge, whether is it for the individual or for the organizations in the workplace, or even for the traditional education institutions, the biggest challenge I see has to do with the mindset, with the culture, It has to do also about leadership. And my point about leadership is, it's a lot about the culture, right? Do you do what you say? You know, you can talk about digital transformation, right? But in terms in your organization, you know, do you even utilize cloud collaboration tools, for example? Some organizations I know, you know, they talk a lot about digital transformation, but, you know, they still send the document itself in the email. And when they have version change, you know, you will end up with 5-6 separate documents, right? So these are the little things. When all these change documents can be consolidated in a cloud collaboration document tool such as Google Work, Workplace, right? Or Google Docs, for that matter, or Google Sheets. And I believe that this has to do with the mindset and whether they are willing to get out of the comfort zone, you know, spend the time and the effort to learn of these tools and not just learn and know, but to implement it across board. That is what I see as the biggest challenge.
In essence, it's fighting with yourself. A famous marketer and writer, Seth Godin, he wrote about the lizard brain. The lizard brain is the one that is always living in fear, in constant kind of comfort, unwilling to move beyond, unwilling to roll up the sleeves and get the hands dirty, basically.
Right, right. And just to give another example, a lot of organizations, they deal a lot with paperwork and signatures. But, you know, e-signatures, you know, for the longest time, at least in Malaysia, has been accepted. But I think a lot of people are not aware of it. The barrier of thinking that e-signatures is not accepted in the courts of law, when in fact it is. This is another example of a lot of what we do can be definitely with speed, you know, if we were to utilize this technology in this case. Of course, in reality, in terms of the traditional education sector, change is challenging. It is both the will of the individual, the will of the organization, and of course, to a certain degree, political will as well. The education institution, you know, by and large, has been the same for ages. It's hard to change the system. But what I'm really glad, you know, not that I'm glad for the pandemic, you know, everyone frowns upon it, but I think the silver lining of the pandemic is that, you know, it accelerates this urgency towards digital transformation. That is a good thing.
When there is a need, there is a will, right?
Yeah. Yes.
How do you see education changing? Because in the last years, to adapt to the rapid transformations in the industry, many education providers, and not to say only universities or colleges, but education providers across the board, including companies themselves with their learning and development departments, with their learning programs, are looking at new ways of how to deliver knowledge and enable, empower people to deploy that knowledge in their daily lives, in their daily work, in their daily activities, especially when the learning journey is no longer, you know, you go to a course, you complete it, now you have the cert done. It has to be in a continuous way, and there is always a risk of a burnout, right? So education providers across different sectors are looking at new ways of transforming knowledge acquisition, for the lack of a better word. So how do you see that changing?
That is changing rapidly, of course, like what you mentioned, you know, thanks to the pandemic. But what we can see globally is that generally schools across board are not ready, actually. They are not really ready to jump online. Tools are not necessarily optimized, right, for how an online delivery can be done effectively. But again, like what I said, regardless, you know, we are all forced to change for the better. There are some patterns which can potentially guide us to design a better future in education. And I'm just going to highlight a few, right? And this has to do with space. How we view the physical space of the campus will have to change. It needs to be a space for connectedness, collaboration, and co-creation. You know, the concept of a teacher standing, you know, in front of the lecture hall with a room full of students who listen and respond to direction is very much increasingly a thing of the past, right? With the aid of technology, students are no longer your students of the past where they will just quietly sit down there and listen and take notes. Whether is it, you know, they are distracted by their phones or laptops, we have to recognize that this is the reality. While this is not an entirely new approach, student learning spaces will have to change. It will need to be more than a typical classroom that we see today. This will see students and like how we see in our school, students becomes, you know, they becomes partner or co-creators of their own learning, right? We become more like a facilitators, more than, you know, a top-down kind of approach. We have also a co-living space. So it's a kind of a different concept of thought. It's a very communal experience here. And we allow collaboration to occur, right, on learning projects between individuals, between small groups. And we also have a co-working space in the campus. As of today, we have around eight tech startups within the space. That allows the students to interact with these founders or, you know, the employees of these startups. And there are ample opportunity for them to learn and collaborate. And of course, for the tech startups, they are able to tap into the talents that our school is creating. So again, you know, the classroom will coexist as a physical space, online and offline, flipping the current learning model actually upside down. Students can learn at home, then they can spend class time collaborating and applying their knowledge in the real world issues. And we see that already happening at Forward School. We embrace that. Our entire delivery is now online. We have a learning experience platform. We utilize Zoom as well as Zoom annotation features very much. And it's still engaging. And at times, you know, students still do drop in this period of time, but it's largely because of collaboration. It's no longer the typical classroom setting that we see.
I'm absolutely fascinated by the mix that you've described. In your normal delivery of a program, could you share with us how much of that would be classroom versus interactive versus virtual?
We see ourselves very much as an applied vocational type of school. That basically means that the way that we assess a student is different, right? We don't assess them by exams, by a sit-down exams. We assess them by projects and mini projects throughout their entire study. Now, traditionally, the TVET, as well as the vocational path, is very much focused on lower skill categories. And what I mean by that is, for example, like carpentry. It's very hands-on and it's a skill, no doubt. And for example, like bartending, right? That's also a skill, right? To mix cocktails and all that. Electricians, that's a skill. And another one is automobile, right? Automobile fixing. So traditionally, the focus on skills is very much in this category. All of us appreciate that. But I think with technology and with programming, with digital skills being made available, that gives us an opportunity for transition. This set of skills as TVET based as well. And I think there will be a shift in terms of traditional education institutions shifting towards more applied-based education. Mm. Because as of today, they are very academic-based. And I'm talking specifically in the tech industry, right? I think when it comes to medical, when it comes to law, when it comes to accounting, I think there's still a space, you know, whereby it is exam-based, whereby it is to test you for your memorization skills as well as how you apply it, like medical. But when it comes to technology, and because of how fast technology grows, how fast it changes, the model needs to change. So for forward school here, like just a typical day, right? They'll come in at 9. They will spend the morning going through some theories, but the rest of the day in the afternoon, they will be very much working on a hands-on project with their peers, whether is it individually or in groups. So I would say that it's very different. I mean, if you were to take a look at our results slip, how it is being structured and shown, it's very different than a typical school. A typical school will just show you for this module, you get an A and B and C, and you know, and then you basically get your GPA score, right? But I think here we try to do it differently. So we try to showcase the specific skills that the students have acquired, as well as their strengths in terms of skills, the area of skills that they are in. So it's fairly different. And our assessment rubrics is different as well. So like what I've mentioned, we have zero sit-down exam. For us here is, if you can do it and you can do it well, and if the program works as expected, that's what it is. And you're good to go, right? It's not about how you can write down the answers, right? It's about the journey, of course, but in the end of the day, if the program works, it works. If it works and it scales well, it works.
It's a really innovative approach. I'm just wondering, you know, in a culture, you know yourself, I come from the UK, where typically in the past it was very traditional. Education was all about certification, and I think there's a great deal of that still in Asia. So there's a lot of emphasis about the certification, the qualification that you obtain. How are you, for want of a better description, educating the market on the value of your approach? And in particular with candidates who are likely to say, what kind of a certificate do I get? And how is that going to help me with employment? Because with an existing workforce within the organization, the value add is far more easily articulated, because I'm already employed going through this program. My boss or, you know, the team I'm working with can see, you know, the improved productivity because I've got a much more collaborative approach. But for somebody who's starting out on their career, or possibly even repurposing their career, which is going to be a reality for many people now, how do you educate the market and increase the acceptance of your approach?
Right. It's still a challenge. And, you know, we are fairly new. Forward School is fairly new. But in this very short time, we have learned, right, that there are a lot of alternative schools like ours with different approaches. A lot of them throws out the notion or the concept of accreditation. A lot of them are not accredited because they don't believe in that, right? And in fact, Forward School as well, right? We talk about the future of work is no longer about paper qualification, but a lot more on skills and competencies. Although we believe in that, but at the same time, at least in this part of the world, to a certain extent, accreditation is still extremely important to most employers.
The reason for that, I think, is there are plethora of training and development organizations. And I think the challenge for most employers, including ourselves, because like you, we are into the development of our employees, whether we do that internally through experiential work, whether it's virtually through our online programs or through partnerships with organizations like yours. But it always seems to go back to the same thing. And that is, when you speak to employers, well, look, there are many organizations that provide training programs. What's so different about you? How do you address that challenge?
We too believe in accreditation, and we are in the process of working towards our accreditation. And we see ourselves as the challenger to the traditional university institution, in a sense. We believe that you can have the best of both worlds. Having an accreditation doesn't mean that you have to forgo the focus on competency and skills, right? We believe that you can be accredited and yet have a focus on skills and competencies and not so much on the academic side, right? Though there are merits on that. We are working very closely with the Jabatan Kemahiran Malaysia,
right,
which is not so much on the Ministry of Education, but more so under the Ministry of Human Resources to a certain extent to do what is relevant to the industry and yet having an accreditation where, you know, the workforce can have confidence in. But back to the whole, you know, idea about paper qualifications and all that, I think increasingly, even parents themselves, right, they recognize that in the future, whatever results that you have, right, they no longer define you. I mean, in terms of the A's and B's and C's, the new age parents, a lot of them are much more open to alternative educations, increasingly so. So I would say that the tides are shifting. But for us at this point in time, we are not going to say that accreditation is not important. We are not going to say that a paper qualification is not important. Also because the audience that we are serving, a lot of them are from the underserved community. And we cannot go out and tell them that, you know, the paper is not important, forget about the paper, and just pick up the skill and go, right? When in fact, the industry is not so much ready as well. If you ask any of the bosses of these companies, they will tell you that they favor skills and competencies over paper qualification. But a lot of times in practice, they don't. And it's not because that the bosses don't appreciate skills and competencies, but it's because I think the HR departments have yet to find a way, you know, in which to categorize these people that is without paper qualification. They are very good at what they are doing, but their current existing HR policies, a lot of organizations, they have salary skills, right? And their salary skills is tied to the paper qualification.
Exactly.
So if you have a diploma, this is your skill. If you have a degree, this is your skill, right? If you have a master's and above, this is your skill. So I think that needs to change, and that can change with the right kind of, you know, government policies. That can change in a consortium, you know, where all of the companies come together and, you know, really figure out a way.
So do you see this as evolution or revolution? Because I completely agree with your observation. I think one of the biggest challenges is the mindset of the HR community that for so many years we've defined employees and categorized them by their formal qualifications rather than their performance and what they deliver in the organization. I mean, within Manpower Group, we try and take a more balanced view, but even with us, I think there is an element of the qualification that comes
yes,
in.
Yes, yes.
But we tend to, once you're within the organization, and again, from in terms of our intake, in the majority of cases, we're really looking at work experience. And for us, competencies are super important. So all of our employees go through a profiling tool so that we can get a better understanding of their core competencies, their strengths, and that how that aligns with, you know, how we want to develop our organization.
Yeah.
But it sounds as if you and us are having very similar conversations with the receivers, and that is there's a different way to evaluate the contribution of employees. I'd like to get your thoughts. Do you see this as something evolving over a period of time, or is it this is the time? COVID has changed life forever. It's a time for a completely revolutionary approach.
Before you answer, just wanted to ask you though, Sam, wouldn't you agree that the reason for this situation, I mean, it is much easier and much quicker for an HR person or a talent acquisition person to say, look, this is the job, and for me to filter out people who are not relevant, it is significantly quicker for me to look at formal qualifications rather than have a deep dive and look at what type of projects or applications or activities this person has conducted in the past. Because from one side, yes, assessment tools do provide profiling, and certainly that is significantly much impactful than just simply looking at the certificate. Real value of an individual will only be shown after a certain period of time of them showcasing, like maybe with coders, with designers, it is easier because they can bring a portfolio. Nevertheless, when you look at a resume, rarely do you have a resume attached with a portfolio, and rarely does an HR person will go through a portfolio, because then it becomes subjective, right? If I'm an HR person, I look at this portfolio of design elements, I like them. Another HR person would look at them and say, this is rubbish. But when both of us looks at a formal paper qualification, we can't argue about it. It's a paper.
Well, there is another school of thought, and that's the piece of paper is rubbish. Because in reality, having qualifications does not necessarily in any way, shape, or form guarantee your ability to be able to translate that knowledge into useful outcomes. And I'll give you an example. Within Manpower Group, Howie, over the last 10 years, we've trained and deployed thousands of graduates. And one of the consistent themes that we see is this. In fact, I'll throw some stats at you. One in three graduates in Malaysia have qualified or have taken a degree that does not align with their core competency. So you have accountants with very low levels of detail orientation. You have people who have taken law degrees and they you know, their core competency is communication and wanting to have variety. So the reason why I asked the question about evolution rather than revolution is the concept of having qualification as a screening tool is not only archaic, but just downright lazy.
Right.
So the key is, do you continue with a tool that's been I want to choose my words carefully. I don't have a problem with starting a revolution, but I don't want to sort of upset the good people out there in the community.
Right,
but
right.
Essentially, at the end of the day, you're really looking at a couple of things based on my experience, and I'm old school. Number one is what is the ability of this individual to contribute to the organization? And I think you're going to measure that far more with, as Kashif is saying, with more of a portfolio. So my guess is, why not a portfolio? If as an organization, you can define the type of projects or the type of achievements that could potentially align with your needs, I think this could be a great way to screen people into the organization. And also, we are great believers in transferable skills. So you could be working as a financial person or an accountant, let's say, for example, in the semiconductor industry. But the skills that you have are transferable, not just from an accounting point of view, but ability to be able to analyze into something completely different in a completely different industry. So I'm just wondering whether we're educating the right people. Maybe it's the HR community that we should be spending some time with, because they will be the drivers or perhaps hopefully the torchbearers of this initiative. What are your thoughts?
I believe that something revolutionary needs to take place. We have an aptitude test, our own internal aptitude test. You can come with your SPM, for example, your high school paper, but that is not the most important thing for us. The most important thing for us is whether you can do well in our aptitude test. Now, our aptitude test is a test that we crafted in-house. It's just 20 questions. You have 30 minutes to do it online, and it will give us a certain level of aptitude of programming for you. That we take it seriously. Now, A lot of the corporates are asking if our aptitude test is available for them. So there is some signal that they are getting a bit lethargic reviewing resumes because they know that that doesn't quite give them anything. They can have their own internal tests as well, but a lot of times they don't, right? When they see a product such as this, they are attracted. Now, on top of this, for us, is how we are doing it differently is that we are experimenting and trying to build up a platform which we call a virtual internship. In this virtual internship, basically, the potential employees or prospects, they will go through this internship, then accomplish a few tasks. Part of the task is basically the aptitude test. What I feel is that we can do more in terms of helping the HR through technology to make their job easier. I think they are extremely open to ideas such as this, and we are working with some organizations to test what we have. So I would say that to me, it's revolutionary because it's something new, right? It's something that potentially they have not used before. All along, they have just been vetting resumes, right? So they need something more. And I see opportunities for us to fill that gap. Now, of course, the question is, what is that? And how does it look like? And so at Forward School, we are doing a few things that looks pretty different, starting from their results sheet, their results slip, to helping the HR to vet their employees in a sense. I think there's also tremendous opportunity whereby, you know, a school like ours and an organization like Manpower could potentially collaborate in ways in which that we can further educate the organizations as well as providing the HR departments with a valuable tool that will help them get out of this rut, for the lack of a better word. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Howie. We're at the top of the hour. I really appreciate the conversation which we had. It was really, really engaging, I have to say. I would like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to our episode today. If you have any questions, go to manpower.com.my/worklifecafe. Send them over and we will gladly address them. Make sure to check out Forward School, which hopefully will resonate with you regardless of whether you're an employer or you're an employee or a student looking to upskill and grow as a person and in your career. Good luck, everybody. Stay safe.
Thank you.
See you later, guys.